Children sometimes ask very perceptive questions. When one of my daughters was 7 years old, we were chatting about the bravery of people like Christopher Columbus, who, despite thinking the earth was flat and they might fall off the edge, sailed off into the unknown. She suddenly said, "Daddy, did Jesus think the earth was flat?" A very good question. Did Jesus understand quantum mechanics and other such scientific complexities? And if so, when did this understanding come to him? Incidentally, I'm not saying that I believe this. Our other daughter one day questioned my wife. She asked, "Mummy, if you'd married someone other than Daddy, would I be me? How would you answer that?" Our genes and DNA would, of course, be somewhat different, as would how we are brought up. These are things that happen to us, over which we have no control. But do we have any control about who we are? Decisions we make certainly affect the people we become. So we do have some say in what makes me, me. I'd like to share a personal story of how a decision I made affected my spiritual journey. I had a lovely upbringing as an only child, but as I grew up, I wasn't aware of religion or belief in God playing any part in the lives of my mum and dad. As far as I know, religious beliefs just weren't a factor for them. Thus, not for me either. The first time I really thought about religion was due to my first girlfriend being a Christian. We started going out together when I was 16. I joined her in going to the Methodist church and was open to her beliefs, as this didn't seem to affect our relationship. But after a couple of years together, she went to a teacher's training college, studying to be a teacher of religious education. I didn't mind her having what I'd come to perceive as these funny ideas, but the thought of her spending the coming decades indoctrinating children made me very uneasy. I said that if she was to pursue this path, we'd better break up. She did continue, and we parted our ways. We both felt a lot for each other, so our parting went deep with me. The breakup had brought a knife into my heart. In my case, the Christian religion ceased to be primarily a head issue. My subsequent negativity and antagonism was evident in doctrinal discussion. But the deeper issue and motivating factor, which few were aware of, was the hurt caused to and by a precious broken relationship. I had become a militant atheist. I went to university in London, which was a great experience on several fronts. But amongst other things, I relished getting into frictional discussion with Christians. To illustrate my mentality at this time, in my final year, I became student body president of what is now the City University, London. It was traditional for the president to say grace at the annual dinner. I refused to do this, even though my surname is Grace. I've been through many belief stages since then, including spending 30 years at the local Baptist church, where my wife and I were baptized together. Total immersion. but we changed our spiritual home to Quakers 12 years ago. Whatever my personal beliefs now, which tend to be towards non-theism, a desire to be a bridge builder has grown in me in recent years. When you look at the present day world, it is quite clear that bridging conflicting gaps and trust building is an overarching need. This conviction has partly been focused in me by being the executive producer of the award-winning film Beyond Forgiving. This features two South Africans, Letlapa Mahmaleli, a Liberation Army commander during the apartheid period, ordered retaliatory massacres on white civilians. Jin Faree, mother of one who was killed, 23-year-old Cape Town University student Lindy, later forgave Letlapa. These two came together on a remarkable journey to bring healing to their country and the wider world. What brings together two people, a white female Christian and a black male atheist, in common cause after such a horrific experience? It's a great pleasure that we have Letlapa with us here this evening on this Zoom call, and you'll hear from him later. But the director of this film is my colleague Imad Karam. He is a Palestinian Muslim from Gaza. He'll be returning to his home in London from Gaza tomorrow. Imad says that a primary problem in his part of the world is that Palestinians and Israelis are both trapped in their own narratives. I'm sure that this entrapment is true for so many situations, whether with international strife, religious affiliations, husband-wife clashes, or even football team allegiances, which sometimes turn to crowd violence. As a way forward, Imad highlights the value of really living into each other's lives, of walking a mile in the moccasins of the other, as the saying goes. But further than that is the importance of bringing our own contributions to seeking a shared vision which we can all buy into. What would this mean on the religious front? In the last few decades, a lot has transpired related to interfaith. But could it be that the next move forward is to see believers versus non-believers as a false dividing line, and explore the more fundamental commonalities that these have? So, what is the heart of our shared humanity? The title of this session. There was a recent newspaper headline quoting a man who, at great risk to himself, jumped into the sea to rescue a drowning girl. The headline stated, "It was totally instinct. There was no thinking about it." It seems to me that impulses like compassion appear to come from an innate instinct in our human hearts rather than our beliefs. This has also been apparent in the COVID pandemic. Those who work for health and caring professions are also a really mixed bunch in terms of beliefs and cultures. I suspect that most people are responding to the pandemic out of a basic human instinct, irrespective of beliefs about where this originates. Let us consider religion a bit further. Look at the world map. It happens to be centered on Spain. Which would you say is bigger, Africa or Greenland? I was planning to have a small discussion about this, but those of you who saw my article in The Friend, the Quaker magazine, a couple of weeks ago, know the answer to this. In fact, Africa is 14 times the area of Greenland. You can't map from one dimension into a lower dimension without considerable distortion. Think of three dimensions there, opening into two dimensions. Could we have the other map, please? Thank you. Just to give us one different perspective, see a map by Australian Donald Bai, who was tired of seeing Australia in the bottom right-hand corner. He also turned the map the right way up. Could you please close the map? Thank you. John Hick, former vice president of the World Congress of Faiths, writes, concerning the different and often conflicting belief systems of the religions, our Earth is a three-dimensional globe. But when you map it on a two-dimensional surface, such as a piece of paper, you have to distort it. You cannot get three dimensions into two without distortion. But if a map made in one projection is correct, it does not follow that maps made in other projections are incorrect. If they're properly made, they are all correct, and yet they all distort. Perhaps our different theologies, both within the same religion and between different religions, are human maps of the infinite divine reality made in different projections. These all necessarily distort, but perhaps all, in different settings, are equally useful in enabling us to make our journey through life. However, when thinking about the divine, we aren't just thinking of going from three dimensions to two. We are thinking about dimensions far beyond our own. The reality behind the word God is beyond religion, just as it is beyond science. American physicist Henry Stamp expresses this from a scientific angle. He says, the most fundamental processes of nature lie outside of space-time, but generate events that can be located within space-time. Thus, on the scientific front, present-day cosmologists talk about dark matter and dark energy because of the effects on our visible universe. But just like concepts of the divine, that too is beyond our current human comprehension. From the religious standpoint, we use metaphor. For instance, in the Christian tradition, Psalm 18 says, the Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. God is clearly not literally these things, in the same way as she is not a literal father. But these are all helpful metaphors in certain contexts. But problems arise when we literalize metaphor. Scottish mathematical biologist J.B.S. Haldane wrote, My suspicion is that the universe is not only queerer than we suppose, but queerer than we can suppose. If this is true, also of the divine, I ask myself, what are the implications for our human family? Although we all, believers and non-believers, tend to talk about God as though we know what we're talking about, we are all reaching out for a reality which is beyond our present human comprehension. In his booklet, Why Silence? Revisiting the Foundations of Quaker Worship, Brian Holly refers to a deeper encounter with silence as soul silence. He writes, "It is better to leave the mystery as a mystery without definition, without labels." Clearly, George Fox had been seeking something within a Christian context, and having found it, he interpreted it in a Christian context. But we now have evidence, which he did not, that the experience is common to humans of every religion and those who have none. So the context is not important. Whether you are a theist, non-theist, agnostic, or atheist need not affect your experience of soul silence. However, if we want to label it, there is a danger that it may diminish our experience of it. By labeling it, we will only ever be able to think of it within the confines of our label, which is perhaps why, once belief in traditional Christianity began to wane among Quakers, the experience did too. The experience had been too closely associated with the label. I started off by referring to my friend Letlepa Mpahlele, the former South African Liberation Army commander. And he's with us tonight. He wrote an article in Progressive Voices, the UK magazine of the Progressive Christianity Network, in June 2018. I would appreciate, Letlepa, if you could read to us and quote your final paragraph from that. So I'll pass over to Letlepa. It's up on the screen in front of you.
Yes, it's on the screen, but my picture is obscuring some of the words. But anyway, I've written it on the paper as well. I begin, quote, "Beyond prejudices we inherited from our forebears, across the fences and walls we erect around ourselves, across doctrines and dogmas we uphold, perhaps it helps to acknowledge that there is a thread that runs through all the ideologies and all the schools of thought, common humanity. And if we recognize humanity in others, no matter how different from us they look and dress and talk and worship, will be nourishing and watering the roots of our own humanity. Is this a vision that can unite atheists like myself with a variety of religious believers where we come together for a greater, yes, the reality of a shared humanity," unquote. That's the end.
Good, thank you very much, Letlepa. I see that as a challenge to us. So let us now have a couple of minutes silence to ponder how we see the heart of our shared humanity. And I've a couple of questions for you to think about, but do feel free to consider other issues which have also been prompted by this initial presentation. And after our time of silence in a couple of minutes, we'll open it for discussion. So the two questions are, do you feel there is a vital link between God, believers, and non-believers? If so, or if not so, explain your take on this. And the second question, thinking about our present world situation, do you think that a conviction for our shared humanity should override all other group allegiances, including your own allegiances? Thank you. Let's just sit quiet for a couple of minutes.